People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome in hour number three of the program here on Wednesday morning. And it is time now to be joined by our special guest. We have coming up in Fairhaven two anti-racism workshops planned for October 20th and November 10th. They're going to be happening at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 102 Green Street in Fairhaven. They'll be happening on both days from 11:15 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. And leading those workshops will be our guest, Reverend Maria U.T. McCabe, who joins us now on the program. Good morning, Reverend. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
So you are someone who has spent your life and your work dedicated to pursuing and promoting social justice.
It's extremely important to me, especially in my ministry, yes.
And so what was it that motivated you to want to make this a focus?
It's really part of my lived experience, Tim. I'm 71 years old. I'm a light-skinned woman of Puerto Rican descent whose native language is Spanish, and it was a language we always spoke in my home. And I grew up experiencing what it is like to live in a world or in a country where some people are treated better than others, and they're treated better often simply because of the color of their skin or their ethnicity. I watched my own relatives deal with this, and it felt to me, as it feels to so many of us, you know, inherently unfair. And because my experience is a lifetime of living in both worlds, I felt, especially when I heard the call to ministry, that perhaps I could be someone who could help bring people together to talk about these difficult topics of what makes us learn to hate someone who looks different from us, and how can we move past that to, you know, this is going to sound idealistic, but to perhaps create a safer and more loving world for our children and grandchildren.
And, you know, I hear a lot of people use the term institutional racism when describing the way that some of these race relations have fallen short in this country. And I think that part of the problem is that people don't really understand what that term means. It's not that we are inherently racist. It's that the racism was kind of baked into a lot of the policies that we were making that we still rely on and follow in 2024.
So I appreciate that you bring up that term. Some of us also call it systemic racism. And I would say that the fact that most folks are unaware is also true, and the systems can be inherently unfair. And I'd also say that personal bias is something that many folks learn unconsciously and deploy it unconsciously. And so, for example, you know, in these days where, you know, as I know some of your guests in the last few weeks have talked about this, I heard your interview with Diana, is it Diana McLean? Was that her name? The author of the book, mm-hmm. Remaking Our Space. You know, the rhetoric about how, you know, all immigrants are rapists or murderers, you know, these are things that cause harm today, and they foment, you know, they encourage us to feel hate instead of feeling curiosity. And so understanding actually, you know, it's been said here in the United States that Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in the United States. So it's one of the reasons I think it's important to talk about this in church. But understanding and having conversation, you know, can make all the difference. I've seen this happen over and over in the churches where I've served.
And so when you're speaking about this, I mean, obviously it is a conversation that everybody's going to be coming into with different life experiences, with different kind of, even if they feel that they've never experienced it themselves, they have different perspectives on what it might be. How do you address something in a universal way that is such a subjective experience for so many people?
Well, you're right. It is subjective, and I, you know, honestly, I'd go a little further. I'd say it's really emotionally charged for a lot of people. You know, we can talk about a lot of topics, but you know, the existence and persistence of racism is really difficult. And so, you know, we come in with our own perspectives and with our own fears, you know, depending on what our experience is, and my approach when I lead these conversations is to bring, to encourage honesty and kindness, and to encourage deep listening. Once, you know, it's easy to hate someone you don't know. It's easy to hate them from afar, or it's easy to fear them from afar. But, you know, if I talk to someone who's different than I am, and I realize we both had to take care of our moms with Alzheimer's, or one of our kids was getting in trouble in school, or whatever it is, we can find the common spaces between us. But we can't do that unless we get to know one another. So that's my approach. I've ministered for some time, and I know that what we feel and what we may have different opinions and different perspectives based on our experience, but we're all human beings. And we all want to take care of the people we love, and we all want to live in a safe world. And, you know, most of the people in this country don't want the kinds of divisions we're living under. We want to live into the positive and try to make things better.
And one of the focuses I know of these workshops will be discussing the foundations of what is called white privilege. And again, that's a term that gets thrown around a lot. And I don't know that people necessarily understand what that phrase is representative of.
Well, you know, thank you for asking about that. It's a term that was coined actually decades ago, and the idea is to recognize for the majority of us in this country who walk around in light skin that we receive without realizing it, without even thinking about it. Much of the world we live in is geared toward us and not to those among us who might have darker skin or different ethnicity. So I'm going to share, it's going to seem like a really trivial example, but it's an example from my own life. So I have light skin, but I have olive colored skin. And I remember being in high school in the 1960s, And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to look good, like I guess most girls my age. But I couldn't find makeup that matched my skin because all the makeup was made for, you know, young girls and women who had lighter skin. And while that is not an example of, you know, major human suffering, it was true. And nowadays, thankfully, you know, all these years later, it's different, right? Folks, young girls of color and women, and, you know, we can go to the store and find things in all the beautiful shades that humans come from. But white privilege becomes more serious when, you know, if I'm a mother of color and my son is driving, my son is much more likely, you know, on a highway, my son is much more likely to be pulled over. My son is much more likely to be, you know, to be even harmed or incarcerated. I remember being in seminary with, you know, lots of, and it was my theological education, with lots of folks and a lot of racial diversity. And I remember learning the term driving while black. White privilege is having, with, like I said, without understanding it, not only the ability to always find products that are for me, but also to get in everything from housing to jobs, to access to safe neighborhoods, to access to borrowing money, getting an advantage that people of darker skin color don't have. And so it's a term that almost sounds, it almost sounds, I don't know what the word, like scientific and not real. But when all of us understand how that works, then we can try to not only look at ourselves and see how, what we can change to make this world more fair. Do you think that helps folks understand?
I think so. And you're kind of getting a little bit choppy on the phone there, but we were able to hear what you were saying, but it just was cutting out a little bit. One thing that I think is why that's such a charged term is because it's also been in some ways utilized against people that just as nobody should be treated as less than because of how they were born. You know, some people take offense in the idea of being treated as more than because of the way that they were born. And the people who get offended by that term are internalizing it as opposed to realizing that it's not something that is necessarily applying to them as individuals, but applying to society as a whole. And I think that that's an important distinction that if people understand, then they could say, wait, now I see what you're saying, because then it doesn't become an attack on them personally.
Absolutely. It has, it's absolutely positively has no attack on any individual at all. It's just, as you were saying earlier, it's how things are structured, right? It's how things are set up. And until we know about them and understand them as a society, we can't change them.
And people who look at it and say, okay, so you couldn't find makeup that was that matched the shade of your skin, or a little black girl looking for a doll in the store could only find white Barbies. I mean, there are worse things in life is, you know, with the people that are critical of this will say, but they don't realize that every one of those little things starts to add up and makes you feel more and more marginalized as if you don't have a place in society.
Right. Or looking around, you know, and looking for billboards that have people that look like you, and then trying to move into a neighborhood where, because of the way you, I mean, it gets more serious as it gets deeper. Right. And all of these things, you know, as you say, all of these things add up. And when it comes to the things that really matter, right, when that persists and when the racial bias persists in the kind of house I can buy, you know, people of color pay higher taxes on you know, homeowners' taxes. And when it becomes fearing of getting afraid every time your son gets behind the wheel of the car, and not because of his driving, but because of the color of skin, it impacts quality of life. It impacts not only that, but it costs our economy. It costs all of us. And this is according to the Council on Economic Advisors of the White House. It costs the economy in the United States trillions of dollars each year. So, I mean, that's something that impacts all of us, regardless of how we look.
So these workshops are going to be happening on October 20th and November 10th at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Fairhaven. What can people expect if they come to one of these workshops?
They can expect a caring and respectful environment and the opportunity to learn and to engage in conversation about things that affect all of us, and to learn that having these conversations is a path forward to understanding and to, you know, deepening our way of living faithfully in the world.
Now, I think one of the concerns that people have when you have something like this, when you have a workshop like this, is they'll say, well, of course, the people that are going to show up are going to be the people that are, and it's a term that I don't really love, but, you know, it's going to be the woke people that show up to this, the people that are already aware of these problems and the people that are already trying to do something about it. But that's just as important as getting people in that need to hear this message for the first time or from a different perspective, because they're the people that can help carry that message in through the community.
At 100%. And thank you so much for saying that. You know, that's it's like we say in my business, right? We don't want to preach to the converted. We want to preach to those who can really benefit and whose lives can really improve by hearing this and understanding this. And maybe feeling less threatened, right? And maybe feeling more included in a conversation rather than feeling attacked. That's also, I mean, and thank you for bringing that up again.
And to borrow a term from your business, you know, they need to be the ones to evangelize these ideas and these concepts and to be able to spread them in the community after the workshops are over.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, it's, again, person-to-person sharing, right? Person-to-person sharing. Hey, wait a minute. This isn't so bad. You know, we don't need to view each other with distrust, because that just makes life worse for everybody.
And we need to talk about it in these complicated terms. We can't just simplify it. I mean, I've even seen people who have said, who are trying to rise above this systemic racism and say things like, you know, I can't believe that we really let, you know, skin pigment decide how we treat other people. Like, we've got to be better than that. But even that is such a surface level understanding, no pun intended, of what the actual problem is. It goes much deeper than that.
It goes deeper, and it goes for a lot longer. And you'll hear, as I hear all the time, people will say, well, why are we still talking about this? You know, slavery ended a long time ago. Why are we still talking about this? We're still talking about this because it still is impacting a lot of people's lives. If not, I would say, Tim, everybody's life, regardless of your skin color, right? We're marinating in something that doesn't help us solve the problems we have as human beings.
And I see the same concepts and the same problems that exist with racism being applied to other segments of society. You know, it goes to the LGBTQ community. It goes to people of different religious beliefs. And you wonder, if it's so easy to marginalize any particular portion of society, then it's pretty easy for you to be marginalized as well. You know, you being the kind of the editorial you, it could be anybody that ends up getting marginalized for whatever reason. And we need to understand that we are all one people that need to get along as such.
So not only are you 100% right, but I'd go even a step further, because the truth is negativity is contagious, right? Hatred is contagious, but so is positivity. And staying, like I said, marinating in the negativity and marinating in the bad feelings, it just increases itself. But when we're able together, and we can't do it alone, right? White people can't do it alone. People of color can't do it alone. LGBTQ plus people can't do it alone. We have to all do it together. We all need one another to make it. And at the end of the day, my prayer, and it's really my prayer, and it's really my hope, and it's the faith in a God of of love and compassion that motivates me. I think we're going to do better. The better we understand each other, all of our lives will be improved.
Absolutely. So again,
maybe I'm idealistic, right? I guess I'm a minister. I'm allowed, right?
Yeah, it comes with the territory. You're supposed to be, because you're supposed to help us all get to that point as well. And you will do that with these workshops coming up October 20th and November 10th, 11:15 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 102 Green Street in Fairhaven. Reverend, thank you for joining us this morning and for enlightening us. And I hope that there's a great turnout for these two workshops.
Me too. Everyone is welcome. Thank you so much, Tim, for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
And that, again, is Reverend Maria UT McCabe, and we thank her for joining us this morning. We did have a few phone issues there, but I think we got the message for sure from that. And you can get the message in person at those workshops coming up on October 20th and November 10th. Right now, though, I've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments. 508-996-0500. All right, we do have a call on hold, but I'm going to ask the caller just to hang on because I got to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt. Take it away, Phil.
Harris says she's confident about the presidential election. Families of Maine's mass shooting victims planning to sue. And something you can't see messing with the price of your home?
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Vice President Harris is confident about November's election.
I'm going to win. But it's tight.
In a radio town hall event with the Breakfast Club host Charlemagne the God, Harris also tried to quiet critics who say she sticks to the talking points too much. She said she repeats the same messages because people need to hear and receive the most critical issues of this election. She said what's at stake in the election is, quote, truly profound. Former President Trump refused to talk about whether or not he's spoken with Russian President Vladimir Putin since he left the White House. Brian Shook reports.
He was asked about Putin during an interview with Bloomberg News at the Economic Club of Chicago Tuesday.
Well, I don't comment on that, but I will tell you that if I did, it's a smart thing.
Trump did defend the idea of him having talks with Putin since he's been out of office. He said, if I'm friendly with people, if I have a relationship with people, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Bob Woodward wrote in his new book that Trump and Putin have secretly remained in contact the past few years. I'm Brian Shook.
Families of the victims of a mass shooting in Maine that left 18 people dead are planning to pursue negligence claims against the federal government. The family spoke on Tuesday after their lawyers announced they're intending to sue the Defense Department, the Army, and the Keller Army Community Hospital in West Point.
It's so difficult for us to relive those moments. It's even more tragic that there were many opportunities to prevent this.
The families allege they failed to respond to any warning signs that the gunman, Robert Card, made before going on a shooting spree at a bar and a bowling alley in Lewiston a little over a year ago. FEMA is helping South Florida communities picking up the pieces from last week's tornadoes. The agency's disaster assistance teams are going door to door. Officials will connect residents with resources and help them apply for federal aid. Holiday sales are slated to set a new record in 2024. The National Retail Federation announced they could go up by as much as 3.5% from last year, reaching about $980 billion. This as inflation begins to cool. And depending on what state you're in, ghosts in your home can affect a sale. Bree Tennis with more.
A new report from real estate site Zillow says only 4 states require people to report any kind of paranormal activity at a residence to a potential buyer. That means ghosts can be a deal breaker, but only in New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Minnesota. In California, you only have to tell the buyer if someone died in the house within the past 3 years. But if you can prove your new home is haunted and it's affecting market value, you can sue the seller for non-disclosure. I'm Bree Tennis.
WBSM Sports.
Preseason now in the rear view for the Celtics, wrapping it with the Raptors last night. Now it's on to the new season. Boston hosting the New York Knicks at TD Garden on Tuesday, the 22nd. But first, Bruins on the road tonight to play the Colorado Avalanche at 9:30. And the Patriots go from New England to OG England. They're in London on Sunday, facing the Jacksonville Jaguars. Game starts at 9:30 a.m. on this side of the pond.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
A chilly start to your Wednesday. Frost possible. Sunshine as we get into the day. A high of 54 degrees. Cold tonight and a frosty start on Thursday. Partly cloudy, a high of 58. More sun on Friday. Looking sunny for the weekend as well. Temperatures possibly hitting the low 70s by then. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
All right, let's go right to the phones. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM. Oh, there we go. Sorry. I had you parted down.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Good. So I watched your Amityville thing. I sent you that picture, and that was, you're about half the man, like I said, half the man you used to be.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you look incredible now, I'll tell you that. So, it was interesting. I've never really paid attention to the actual history of the house, but it was a good episode.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting about it was how they were bringing in the TikTokers and the social media generation and how they were keeping that story going. And at first I was like, yeah, well, these people just, you know, all they do is take the work that other researchers have done and regurgitate it, and they're making money off somebody else's research and work. But over the years, yeah, I've gotten to know some of them. In fact, both Patches and Becky, who were featured in there, have both become good friends of mine. I've learned over time that, you know, not everybody is doing that. So the people like them are actually doing the work and doing the research to try to see if there's things that people missed.
Yeah, it was definitely like a crazy, like when I was just watching, I was like, that's a crazy story. Like, the fact that he didn't recognize his own mom and dad when he was given, you know, shown pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, there was definitely something that was off on that guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've learned over the years that anything that Ronnie DeFeo says can't be trusted. So
yeah,
I know somebody that became kind of his spiritual advisor in prison. And she said, you know, he can't help it. Like he can't help but lie. It just it comes naturally to him, and he doesn't even realize most of the time when he's doing it.
He'd be a perfect politician then. He'd probably win.
I think the hardcore psychedelic drugs might get in the way of some of that. But
but if he can lie without any recourse and actually end up believing his own lie, he would never be caught in one. You'd be like, did you ever say that? Nah, I don't recall.
The question is whether or not he was actually, you know, crazy, or whether or not it was just all calculated. And I don't think that he was that intelligent to be as scheming as he was.
That was a cool episode. I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't even realize you were on TV. I was like, oh, he's pretty kind of famous, I guess. So so the other reason why I called, I watched the Senate debate last night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I watched the Senate debate that was last night. I started watching it this morning. I'm about halfway through. And I have to say, John Deaton is absolutely impressive. And what he needs to do in order to, because a lot of people don't know him, a lot of people are just going to check the box for Warren. But if you are in his campaign and running something, he needs to be in front of more people and go unconventional. I think if he was to go on like WEEI, or you can bleep that out if you don't want to promote another.
No, no, it's fine. Point taken. We get. You're making a point. You're not promoting him.
Yeah. A sports talk radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go on sports talk. Talk the Red Sox. Talk the Celtics. Talk the Bruins. Talk the Patriots. It's about name recognition and just really, you know, pepper in a little bit of policy, like some ideas, but really just get in front of as many people as possible that probably will vote, but it's about name recognition. Be like, oh, well, this guy, John Deaton, he's running for Senate, and he was on, you know, sports talk, and he was talking to Celtics, or he's talking about how the Patriots are going to, you know, go 1-15 or 1-16 this year. You know, he was talking about that. I think because Scott Brown was very effective with that.
He would go on EEI, sure.
He was on EEI at least once a week, talking about the last week's games and stuff. And that literally got him in front of just regular construction workers heading on to work, who normally they don't listen to political talk. They don't even really pay attention, but they just go in and they just check a box. But because he went into their realm where they pay attention, he won. That was one of the ingredients on why he won. There was other ingredients on why he won too, but I think that was a very effective strategy, and I think John should replicate that, and I think that would be very effective for him. And within the first 10 minutes of the debate, he absolutely annihilated Warren in regards to the immigration. You know, she just stuck with points and talking points that she consistently always says, tried to box him in with Trump, where he just completely negated that within 30 seconds. He says, "Look, I'm not even in the camp." You know, it was really, really well done. I think he won handedly. So yeah, it'd be interesting. I know Chris will probably go on for a long time in the next 3 hours on the debate last night, but I think he did really, really well.
Well, I mean, your point is taken about, you know, Deaton needing to go to some of these places and that it worked for Scott Brown, but it worked for Scott Brown until it didn't. I mean, he got defeated by Elizabeth Warren. So I think what works in Deaton's favor more than anything is there Elizabeth Warren fatigue? Because, you know, remember last time she ran, you know, she was dedicated to the job and then decided to run for president right after. So, I mean, is that something that people are still going to hold against her and say, you know, you weren't as all in for us as you said that you were. And even now we're not sure that you're really all in for Massachusetts.
Right. Exactly. What's her aspirations? Like I said, there's a lot of other ingredients on why Scott Brown won. Scott Brown won because of extremely low turnout. It was a snowstorm during the special election. So, and when it became a general election, he lost. And he lost because her supporters tripled out the turnout. So that's another reason why he lost. And then just obviously, you know, whatever other reasons there could have been in the general election. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and Harris brought this up, a policy that she's proposing for, and it kind of ties into your previous segment in regards to racism. Harris brought up forgiving loans to black men.
Well, I mean, she's just throwing everything on the table right now because they're losing ground in that demographic.
Right. But let's talk about racism here. You are literally going to forgive people based on the color of their skin. How is that not also racism?
So it's not based on the color of their skin. It's based on the discrimination that they have faced. So saying that it's based on the color of your skin is too simplistic of a view because you're eliminating the fact of what the color of that skin has caused to happen to them.
Correct. All right. So what I'm saying is not every black man has gone through the same thing as every other black man. Everything's on the individual, right? Everybody has different experiences. Mm-hmm. Herman Cain, who I think passed away, is a very wealthy individual. Why should his loans be forgiven? You know, it should be based on income level. I agree with that. Like, you should be able to help people who are poor. So a poor white kid can have his business loan forgiven just as much as a black kid, a black entrepreneur. It should be based on statistics and metrics, not on your skin color. And the fact that she brought that up, we're going to forgive. So if I went in as a Portuguese guy, went in and I said, I would like to have my loans forgiven too, because I'm below, you know, a certain income level, just like this black guy is. Can I have my loan forgiven? No, you're not black. Well, then that's racist. That's literal, the definition of racism, just on another person. So I think this is why politics is so dirty. This is why, this is one, another reason why I'm not going to vote for Harris is based on that. Because imagine this if Donald Trump said that on the other side. A white Appalachian man who just went through the worst hurricane in the history of the United States with the mudslide. We're going to forgive his loans. White business owner in Appalachia. It'd be on every single talk radio show right now about how racist that is.
So, but there are qualifications to what this proposal is. First of all, it's black men that are in the cannabis industry, which is something that has been a major criticism of that industry is that black people have been shut out of that industry for something that they're a large portion of the clientele of, but yet there aren't equal opportunities for black people to become the owners of those businesses. So that's what that's what kind of the focus was of that. And the other part of it too is this is actually not that different from her plan to offer these loans for anybody that's starting a business. She wants to offer tax breaks to people that start a business. So it's really not that different. And also, this is just bringing black people and black men into the conversation because that's who she's hurting with right now. But as you said, you know, if you go in there as a Portuguese guy, I got a plan. I got a feeling that the plan will extend to people like you as well, depending on, you know, again, qualifications. It's not just as simple as you're black and you're in the cannabis industry. Here you go. There will be other qualifications involved.
Understood, but that's not how she's promoting it. And this is that was literally my problem.
But of course, promotion
is the promotion is to buy votes of the black men. But that's the biggest thing for me.
Well,
is that
you're going to hear commercials on the radio that tell you about all these great deals, and then when you get there, there's fine print. You know what I mean? Like that happens in every kind of promotion.
But this is my issue: is you're going to have Chinese kids out there who are impoverished, who are trying to be entrepreneurs, and they're more of a minority than the black men, and that they can't get these because it's not being promoted. That why isn't she targeting them? Why is it? It needs to be. If you're going to help people and you're going to help poor people, it needs to be poor people across the board, regardless of your race and regardless of your nationality when it comes to the government. You know, the government should not be segregating, literally, based on the color of your skin. Martin Luther King said it perfectly. And he was one of the biggest promoters for equality based on the content of your character rather than the color of your skin. And now we have presidential candidates that are literally promoting loans or forgiveness of loans based on the color of your skin. And if we're really about getting rid of racism, we need to just get rid of color in general. We are all different shades of brown, Tim. I'm not white. I'm a very, very, very pale brown, right? If we look at an actual white piece of paper and there's no actual black men, they're all darker and lighter shades of brown. We're all one people. But the government, particularly in this case, Harris, is promoting it for political reasons. And this is another reason why I just can't support it. When you're talking racism, you can't just be one-sided. Like,
I don't agree. I don't agree with we have to do away with color. I think color can still be part of your identity. There are people who are proud of that part of their identity.
1,000%.
The problem is that people need to compartmentalize that and how they view people. It's just part of what makes up a person. And it's not the only identifying factor. The same way as, hey, listen, I know lots of people that are conservative and I know lots of people that are Christian. I don't agree with either one of those viewpoints, but I don't judge those people based on it.
But your views based on conservative and being Republican or whatever, that can change. You can't change your race. Right? You can't change your race whatsoever. But what I'm the bottom line is...
Yeah, but whether or not somebody can change doesn't factor into my opinion, because why should somebody have to change because of what I think?
No. You're not changing because of what somebody else thinks. You're changing because of what you think. Your views change based on facts and new data coming in. Your political opinions or your sociological opinions, your sociology opinions. That can all change.
Here's the problem with the conversation about racism in America is ignoring race doesn't fix the problem. Just saying, let's just move past what color you are.
No.
That doesn't solve the problem.
I agree with you 1,000%. You can't ignore it. But you can't fix it by picking winners and losers when it comes to the government giving out money or forgiving loans. You can't.
That's the problem.
Look at it
as picking winners and losers when what it's actually designed to be is righting wrongs that have happened systemically in the past. And because you want to look at it from the perspective of you're giving somebody an unfair advantage when that person has been historically and generationally disadvantaged, it's just trying to whitewash, no pun intended, the problem.
I get what you're saying. I used to be on your side of the fence on this issue because I just look at it as, if you're going to help people, and I'm all about helping people at the government level, there should be different things, different safety nets that you can do, but it should never, never be based on the color of your skin. It should not be.
But it's not based on the color of their skin. It's based on what has happened to them because of the color of their skin.
So if I'm a white guy and I was in the cannabis industry and I'm below a certain poverty level, I'm not going to be able to get that loan forgiven.
I agree with you that there should be an expansion of that. It shouldn't be just limited to that. I'm just saying it sounds too simplistic to say that it's based on the color of their skin. It's based on those experiences. And if your experiences as a person growing up, say, in the inner city or in public housing or anything like that can be factored in as some of those qualifications as well, that's all the better. But I think that's
all economic. But that's economic, not race. So there's a lot of kids, white kids, Chinese kids especially, Chinese kids and Hispanic kids in the city and in public housing that are not going to have, they're not being targeted, Tim. They're not saying, well, we're going to forgive the loans of Hispanic kids that live in the inner city or in the public housing. They're not doing that with Asian kids. It's just specifically black kids. And that's not right. That perpetuates racism on the racist level, right? A racist white guy right now is looking at this and saying, see, once again, this is why black people are bad because they get all the benefits. That's perpetuating racism by a guy who's already racist. It just strengthens it and emboldens him. All right. You want to get rid of it, you got to get rid of that, what they're doing. It strengthens the racists that are already out there.
All right. I'm going to hold you there on that point just because I got to take a break.
All right, Jim. Have a
great day. And, This is an important conversation. We can keep going, but I'm just up against the clock here. So I've got to take this break. Caller, hang on. We'll try to get you in, but I've got to take this break right now. We'll be back in just a few. You're busy like me, and I'm running around all over the place this week and next week and the week after. And so if you've got a hectic schedule like me, when are you going to get your laundry done? Well, Dash Laundromat has got your back because they have brand new lockers right outside of Dash Laundromat located in the Shaw's Plaza there in New Bedford, right on the New Bedford-Dartmouth line, State Road. And they've got these lockers to make it simple, safe, and easy for you. It saves you lots of time. You just drop off your laundry in the locker. They'll wash, dry, fold it for you. They'll put it back in the locker, and then you pick it up when it works for you. Just one of the many great services they offer at Dash, including they'll even come to your home, pick it up, and bring it back to you as well. Come and experience the future of convenience at Dash Laundromat, 1 State Road in Dartmouth. Download the Dash Laundromat app in the App Store and make sure you follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. So again, download the free Dash Laundromat app today and see just how quick and easy doing your laundry can be. All right, caller, I see that you're on hold, but I got one more commercial break. I got to get in before the end of the hour. Let me take that and then we'll try to finish up with your call. 1 minute left. Really quickly, Skeddy, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Have a good show tonight. I just want to know, if I stand to look out at the airport, will I see the comet? Like, what direction do I stand from?
I have no idea. I don't know anything about it. I didn't even know it was happening until I saw people posting photos of it last night.
Yeah, I don't want to miss that. And then second, on Tubi, the animal, there's so many animal films. I can't say the word. I'm sorry. It's a tongue twister. What is it? Like, is it a doc view? What is it that you're on?
It's called Famously Haunted Amityville.
Okay, great.
So just type in Famously Haunted, it'll turn up. I think it's the only one in the series so far.
Okay, and it's on Tubi, you said?
Yep.
Okay, you have a great day.
You as well. Take care.